This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Reverend L.L. White, Church of the Bells, Los Angeles, California. Tonight's subject, will Negroes riot again? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in Los Angeles, California, is Reverend L.L. White, pastor of the Methodist Church of the Bells, one of the largest Negro churches in Los Angeles. And also, he is the first Negro president of the Los Angeles Council of Churches, representing over 300 churches, of which 95% are white. Now, if you'd like to ask Reverend White a question on tonight's topic, will Negroes riot again, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call operators are on duty, our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Our topic, will Negroes riot again? Reverend White, will Negroes riot again?
Well, they might. It depends on whether you have the same combination of circumstances that provided the basis for the recent riot in Watts.
What were those circumstances that caused the riots?
Well, I think they were a combination of massive unemployment. For example, Roy Wilkins has made the statement that during the Depression of the 30s, the unemployed for the nation totaled 25% of the population, whereas the percentage of unemployed in Watts had reached as high as 30%.
Mm.
And so while you had the expression of violence on a national level in 1936, because of this one factor, you also had an equivalent situation in the Watts area, plus, of course, poor housing, isolation, the attitude of having been bypassed by the rest of the larger community, and, of course, unpreparedness to live in an urban situation, having come from a rural background.
Mr. White, do you feel that the white man has the message of Watts?
I think some do, and I think some don't. The question, I think, is whether or not those who are in positions to help ward off this in terms of leadership. The question is whether they have the message or not. It would be tragic, I think, if the people who have the message aren't the people who are able to do something about it, when the people who are able to do something about it don't have the message. Of course.
Well, what are you saying? Are you saying that the responsible citizens in the Los Angeles area didn't get the message before the riots, and now there may be some question as to whether they still have gotten the message?
I think that would be a fair statement. Not applied, of course, to all of the responsible people, but certainly to some. One wonders, for example, whether the people at the leadership level politically has gotten the message, or whether they've gotten the message and yet feel that it's not an appropriate time to act on it. Of course, it might be one or the other.
Mr. White, what were you doing during the riots or preceding the riots?
Well, like the average pastor of the church, I was up to my neck in responsibilities which involved both the local church situation, the larger ecumenical nature of the church through the council of churches, and of course through community activities that were totally unrelated to local church affairs.
In other words, you weren't being as concerned about some of the people in Watts as you might have been. Is this what you're saying?
Well, I think you're putting it mildly, Russ. Actually, a better statement, perhaps, if he wasn't concerned at all. In order to understand that, however, you need to recognize the Los Angeles area, for example, my church is in what they call the West Los Angeles area or the West Adams area, and the Watts area is another section of the same city, but a pretty good distance from where we live, and we don't have the compactness of some of your eastern cities, for example. And so it's perfectly possible to be isolated on the basis of geographical factors rather than anything else. And maybe this is one of the peculiar things with which we must deal here on the coast in the city of Los Angeles.
You say that you were geographically isolated. But don't you think that this could happen in other communities in the United States in the sense that the wealthier Negro doesn't live in a slum area, just as the wealthier white person doesn't live in a slum area?
Well, that's true. And of course, I think it needs to be said that as we move up the economic and cultural ladder, we tend to move out of the central city and the inner city. And this is true, of course, with all peoples, Caucasians, Negroes, Orientals, and what have you. The only difference being the Negro can only move so far as a total group, and yet he can move far enough away to be isolated.
You had lost touch then with the Negro.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, why do people lose touch? I mean, you said geographically. Geography is one reason, but...
Yeah.
Are there other reasons why people lose touch?
Well, of course, it's not just the geography. It is... common interest, it is the participation and involvement in common activities. Actually, it's being a part of a total way of life that's entirely different.
Well, do you think that riots will occur in other places in the United States?
If the same kind of factors prevail unrelieved, as were the prevailing factors in the Watts situation, I think it's perfectly possible. And yet I think this needs to be said, too. I think people who were suffering from the things that the Watts people were suffering from aren't unreasonable people if they get the feeling that somebody's listening to what they have to say and trying actually to do something about it. I think this makes a difference. I'm not so sure that people expect miracles to take place. But I do think they expect to be heard, and that what they've said, they expect it to be considered with some degree of importance. In other words, if the impression is given that everybody's trying to do something about this, then we get cooperation. On the other hand, if the general attitude is, well, this is something we can't do anything about, or your charges are unfounded, or it's just another pipe dream, then I think you've sowed the seeds for these negative reactions.
Would you say that the average Negro in Watts hates the white man?
No, I wouldn't say that, because, again, when you look at the Watts picture, you've got the same pattern for the Watts area as you have in all of the rest of the metropolitan areas. You've got your middle-class Negro in Watts. And, of course, you've got the Negro who is in the category of those that we used to think of as the have-nots. So you've got to draw some lines even there. Now, when it comes to the have-not section of the population, I would make the observation that there's more resentment, there's more dislike than in the other groups. As a matter of fact, I think perhaps... It's a safe statement to say that the man who is furthest down, who is most oppressed, who is most exploited, who is most isolated, who is most shut off, is likely to be the man who has the deepest resentment, not only against whites, but against anybody who has, well, to quote, made it, and he hasn't done it.
Mr. L.L. White is our guest tonight on Night Call. Our topic, will Negroes riot again? Now, you may call us here at Night Call at area code 313-84-6661. Mr. White, what will happen to Negroes in Watts after the publicity dies down?
Well, of course, this is one of the danger situations we face. I think the Negroes will riot again unless the rest of the community becomes sufficiently alarmed and concerned to do something about the situation on a continuing basis after the publicity has died. Somebody made the observation the other day that we need, for the people in Watts now, 5,000 jobs, and we need them by Thanksgiving, or the possibility of the riot recurring has been maximized instead of minimized.
5,000 jobs?
5,000 jobs. That's, well, of course, it may
a
be...
a lot of employment.
Beg pardon?
That's a lot of employment.
That's a lot of employment, and it may be difficult to provide that much. But again, I'm saying that if public agencies and private agencies take this seriously enough to do something about it, even if the 5,000 jobs aren't provided, if some jobs are provided, I think everything that's done in this direction tends to minimize the possibility of this thing happening again. On the other hand, if we say, good Lord, you want 5,000 jobs and we can't provide them and we provide none, it's to repeat the old pattern that gave rise to this thing to start with.
It's a vicious circle, then.
Well, actually, it is.
Mr. Wade, I have a caller in Denver, Colorado now, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. B. Jackson. Good evening, Mrs. Jackson. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
Mr. White?
Yes.
You know, I was only able to listen to part of your program of what you just said. So I am going to pick up pieces, and I have heard the last few nights of the program, and what has happened in the city of Denver that I have heard a few weeks ago has made my blood boil enough to call. And when I heard that you were going to be on, I just stood by this telephone and was going to make the very first call.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I heard you say people don't speak up and say their piece. We don't know about things that are taking place. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right, now it doesn't make any difference the color of the skin or the religion or whatever it is, the race. People are people. Now, if you take a person that is in public office, has a nice position, let's say, and is there to serve the public, in this particular instance, I understand that he is a Negro. Now, when he takes and puts his personal life in, instead of taking care of the public office that he is in there for, what would you do in a case where he has overplayed his hand and made a personal case out of it? Would you just ignore the facts of the case?
Is this a political position he has?
Or would you turn it in?
Oh, I think I'd turn it in. I think when a man has a public position, he has a public responsibility along with it. And even personal considerations are no justification for his being derelict in the execution of his public duty and responsibility.
Now, do you realize what this means to the person involved? How they feel against this particular person, which before they did not have the feeling? You understand me?
Well, if he has a public position, the public position, it seems to me, certainly carries with
That's
it
right.
sense of public responsibility. Now, if there's so much of a conflict between his own personal
instead of taking care of the business at hand and stop there, it became a personal. With the man that is in charge, or the public, he has got the public job, and well, let's say they just took advantage of the case.
Well, I can't see the justification for this.
Would you keep it quiet, or would you just open it up?
Well, I think we have a responsibility to expose anything that's contrary to what ought to be good practices if we know about it. To remain silent, it seems to me, is to give endorsement to this.
Mrs. Jackson, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
And thank you, Mr. White.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson.
Mrs. B. Jackson from Denver, Colorado. A lady who's listening on KTL and concerned about some public official who is evidently not doing his job and whether or not it's morally right to report this person.
Our guest tonight, Mr. L.L. White. Our topic, Will Negroes Riot Again? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight is Mr. L.L. White, a Negro. Our topic, Will Negroes Riot Again? Mr. White is from Los Angeles, and if you'd like to join us here on Night Call, we invite you to do so. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make the call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call number... 313-846-6601. What do you think about the topic, Will Negroes Riot Again? Do you think that the white man understands what was going on at Watts? Do you think he can understand? And on that question, I think I'll ask Mr. White. Mr. White, do you think that the white man can understand what was going on in Watts and what it is to be a Negro?
Well, Russ, let me say this. I don't think he... did understand what was going on, and perhaps the reason for his lack of understanding is as important as anything else. I think maybe the basis or the reason for his lack of understanding is due to the fact that the two groups have not always been communicating with each other. We have sort of talked at each other, but we have not talked with each other. And that's one reason for it. I think perhaps traditionally the Negro has been conditioned to reveal some of his hopes, aspirations, and what have you to the white man and some to withhold. This was one of the techniques of survival back in the days of slavery, and I don't think we've completely overcome it. So this breakdown in communication has been one thing. This is one of the bases for it. Now, maybe something else more important is involved in it, too. I'm not so sure that the American white man, and I'm not saying this about all of us, all of them, but I'm not so sure that the American white man has actually come to the place where he's willing to see the Negro as a human being, as a person. And when I use the term, I'm using it not only in its highest and best sense, but I'm using it in its worst sense. I'm using it in the sense that the Negro can become another Ralph Bunch, another Thurgood Marshall, another somebody else who is prominent among Negroes. At the same time, he has in him the capacity and the possibility to riot and to burn and to destroy. And maybe this is a new image that's emerging in the mind of the American white man, and perhaps an image that's going to be the basis of some better things taking place.
You're a Negro, Mr.
Yes.
White. Does it ever bother you the sort of strange position? Some white people will say, the Negro is lackadaisical, he's not ambitious, he doesn't do anything. If he would do something, he'd go out and make a name for himself, or he'd be heard. However, on the other hand, if the Negro does take some action and becomes a little bit vocal, some people say, well, he's pushy, or he's making too much noise. Now, how does this strike you as a Negro? This argument?
Well, the first part of it doesn't bother me so much, but because the moment the fellow makes this kind of statement, he sort of reveals himself. The thing that does bother me is something that's a little more subtle than that, where you're dealing with people who obviously know this is not true, but who in subtle ways sort of make it clear that while I don't accept this kind of position, I do subscribe to the theory that no matter how effective, how efficient Negro might be, he's still a Negro and therefore has some limitations the rest of us don't have. This is the thing that is at least a little disturbing. And it's bothersome, I suppose, to those Negroes who have to sort of operate in both worlds at the same time. Being a Negro, you belong to the Negro world, let us put it that way. But in a place like Los Angeles and some places here on the coast, you live and eat in the Negro world, but you move across the lines during the day, so you're actually operating and both. This becomes an interesting thing for a man to have to face every day.
Mr. White, I have a caller in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. Norma Harper.
Yeah.
Good evening, Mrs. Harper. You're on Night Call.
Well, fine. I said I would like to ask Mr. White his opinion on whether he thought that the individual Negro citizen should be judged on his individual merits as to his ability to based on his personality and his ability to take a given job, and whether he thought that he had an equal educational opportunity in the North in order to improve his status.
Yes, I would completely subscribe to that theory that he ought to be treated on the basis of his own personal merits as an individual. And I think perhaps when we clamor for better job opportunities, better educational opportunities, this is precisely what we have in mind. At the same time, in our kind of culture, it needs also to be indicated that these things, the fact that he's a Negro, this factor ought not stand against him either. Well, I would put it this way. He shouldn't be given things beyond his deservings because he's a Negro. He should be granted these things on the basis of his qualification. At the same time, the fact that he is a Negro shouldn't keep him out of places where he otherwise qualifies completely.
Norma, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
How would you answer that question?
Well, I'm very happy to have that opportunity. I think very definitely the color of that person's skin should not be used as a measure, a yardstick, whether or not he or she was qualified for that position. I think their ability, their personality, their attitude should be considered, and of course, just like any other individual and any other part of our society. I feel, however, they shouldn't feel they have more privileges because of the situation that involves, and I feel they should definitely feel they're equal, but not better, and not belligerent.
That word belligerent is an interesting word.
How many white people get belligerent?
Yes, that is.
It has nothing to do with the color of the skin. It has to do with the personality. Don't you think that's true?
Mr. White?
Well, I'd like to focus on that word belligerent a little more, because I think this is touching at the core of an attitude that prevails at the moment. And I'm just wondering how much of it is really not belligerence, but the assertion of a new self as over against an old self that's been the pattern for so long. You see, we sort of come to, that is the American people, it sort of come to the conclusion that the image of the Negro is the image of an easygoing, jolly fellow who always finds something to laugh about, to sing about.
Mm-hmm.
And here in more recent times, of course, the real image has been emerging, which suggests that it's pretty much like the image of anybody else, and that if exploited, he fights back. If not treated fairly, he hollers about it. If pushed, he protests. I'm just wondering if this is what is sometimes considered belligerence, as well as really the belligerent person. Of course, I'm the first to admit that you've got some people who are belligerent.
I would have drawn a belligerent word in favor of a hypersensitive. I believe that is a better description.
Hypersensitive.
Right.
Well, that too is an interesting word. Let's look at it within its context. If we use the term hypersensitive in dealing with people who've had privileges for the last 400 years, of course, it has one connotation. But when we use the term in dealing with people who've been underprivileged for 300 or 400 years, then it sort of takes on another connotation.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the conditioning is involved in this that makes the difference.
Well, we're very privileged in Denver to have some very, very fine dark-skinned Americans and in many high places, and also in all walks of life, and we consider them a very necessary, and we're very proud of their participation in our government.
Mm-hmm.
But just like in any other community, there are occasional citizens that are not quite as much to be proud of as in our white as well as our dark-skinned Americans. So I don't think you can judge a person except by their individual merits. You can't group anyone in any particular group and say, well, they're all like this.
But Norma,
is that true?
That's, I would buy that. I would say immediately that you can't look at Negroes and say all Negroes. As a matter of fact, when you start talking about Negroes, you have to really define which Negroes now are you talking about. And of course, the same thing's true Caucasians, any other group. You've got to say which group are you talking about, because there are those distinctions to be made as we speak about people.
And we would hope, and we would certainly hope for better communication.
I think this is the key to better understanding and better relationships, not only for situations which have the potential that Watts has.
Mrs. Harper, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for expressing your opinion. This is Norma Harper, a lady from Denver, Colorado, who believes that communication and understanding is the key to better racial relationships. She's listening, of course, on KTLM. Our guest tonight is Mr. L.
White. He's a Negro, and he's a pastor of one of the largest Negro churches in Los Angeles. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The priest
preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight is Mr. L.L. White. He's a Negro, and our topic, Will Negroes Riot Again? And if you'd like to express your opinion on tonight's topic, or make an observation on what we've been talking about all week, the relationship between Negro citizens and white citizens, whether or not we're communicating for real, or whether or not we're just going through the motions, let's hear what you think about the topic of race relationships in general. You can call us here by buzzing area code 313-846-6601, and you may call from anywhere collect. You may, in fact, reverse the call if you'd care to, or reverse the charges, I should say. So give us a buzz here at Night Call. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Mr. White, I have a caller in Grand Junction, Colorado, a listener on KEXO, Mr. Vern Hunter. Good evening, Vern. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Thank you. I'd like to speak to Mr. Gibb first, if I may.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Gibb's trying to reach you here.
I'm afraid I can't hear Mr. Vern.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Vern. Go ahead.
All right. I tried placing a call through the area code 313. The local operator insisted there was only a 213 area code. Maybe you better get it worked out with the phone company.
You were calling, of course, from Colorado.
Yes.
How did you eventually get through, Vern?
I insisted that there was a 313.
Well, I guarantee you there is a 313, or part of the United States is not really existing then. That we're in an invisible world. Mr. Hunter, you had a comment for Mr. White.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Mr. White?
I'm afraid the reception is not clear. I can't...
Okay. Vern, Mr. White is having difficulty hearing you, but if you'll give me your question, I'll relay it to Mr. White.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, a little better.
Mr. White, I wondered if the Negro request for rights would not receive more favorable attention and reaction and acceptance if they didn't rely more on the courts to win their rights for them through legal procedures rather than creating a riot or laying down in front of trucks, obstructing traffic, or generally causing a nuisance during these riots while they are trying to gain their rights. Wouldn't it be more effective to try and do it all through legal means so that the people would accept it more readily, rather than resenting having something forced down their acceptance gullet, you might say?
Reverend, did you get the question?
Well, I think what Mr. Hunter is asking is whether or not it wouldn't be better if Negroes used the courts to secure their rights rather than to resort to demonstrations. I believe that's essentially what he's saying, isn't it?
Yes.
I feel that the people throughout the entire country would accept the Negro civil rights problem and the results a lot more readily if it were done through legal means rather than being forced upon the people.
Yes. Well, I think, Mr. Hunter, we have to look at some of the very interesting facts of history, which would almost seem to suggest that even the legal provisions that we have for securing rights, and sometimes securing these rights through legal provisions is often a very slow process, as for example in some of the southern states where they have actually discovered loopholes to evade what is legal. But even in places where the legal provisions have been provided, sometimes these legal provisions have not been provided except in cases where protests were made. And of course, one of the most valid means of protest has been the demonstration. Of course, I would hasten to add that all of the demonstrations which have taken place have not been demonstrations led by valid and legitimate civil rights leaders, or the people have come in, of course. In some instances, demonstrations went too far. They got out of hand. And yet after we add these negative factors to it, when we look at the total picture, beginning with the demonstrations in Montgomery, Alabama, and straight up to the last one, I think by and large, they have been pretty carefully guarded and directed, and we've had much less violence than I think we would have had we had no demonstrations at all, because I think the demonstrations not only served to bring attention to a situation which needed to be corrected, but it also served as a safety valve for those who needed some emotional outlet as well as the other thing that was involved. We don't have a history in the United States of having acted too readily on the basis of brotherly love. It seems to me we've acted when we've been actually faced with the issue, and the issue in many instances become embarrassing to us.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes. Well, don't you, I'm not going to argue.
Sure, that's all right.
Hello?
That's perfectly all right.
However, I do think that an effective advertising campaign is always successful in selling any product, regardless of what the product is. And don't you think that once the subject has been brought to light, brought to the nation's attention through a very effective, probably less costly, and certainly less violent advertising campaign, that the people would understand better and would be more willing to back up this problem that the Negroes have?
There's an interesting suggestion.
Well, if I understood Mr. Hunter's comment correctly, I would make the observation that just on the basis of what he's been saying, if the entire American population was like him, I think this would work. But we have some pretty, well, of course, we have some pretty contrasting figures to deal with, and really there is in the minds of a good many people the idea, which has not been uprooted in spite of everything that's taken place, there is in the minds of a good many people the rather entrenched belief that in some strange ways Negro is less than a human being, and therefore he's not to be treated as a human being. This is one of the realities I think we've got to come to grips with. And people who buy this will not be moved too easily by anything. And I'm afraid will not be moved at all on the basis of a voluntary approach to the thing.
Mr. Hunter, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your opinions. Mr. Vern Hunter, a gentleman from Grand Junction, Colorado, listening on KEXO, with the idea that possibly an advertising campaign could help civil rights cause. Let's go out to Baltimore now, listener on WBAL, Mr. Robert Dietz. Good evening, Bob. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Yes, sir. I have a two-part, actually a two-part question for Mr. White.
Go right ahead, Bob.
The first part is the issue the other day that recently came up and the Supreme Court rejected was the busing issue, where you bus school children across town to oppose the so-called de facto segregation. Mm-hmm. My question is, isn't that taking, with the traffic on the roads and the highways, isn't that taking a rather bad risk with the kids?
Well, if the traffic in Baltimore is like it here is here in Los Angeles, that is taking a chance.
I've been on your freeways, Reverend.
Yeah,
what you're talking about.
We've really got a problem. What we need to do, though, I think, is to measure the larger possibilities against the hazards that are involved. I don't get too enthusiastic about the busing situation, but if you've got the kind of conditions that we have in some instances here in Los Angeles, where in one area, one community, you've got an overcrowded school situation to the point where the teacher is not able to give nearly as much time to individual students as she should. As a matter of fact, in some instances where you don't have enough sitting space to accommodate them. And then not too far away is another school with the same grade where you've got less than half capacity. Just as a very practical measure, it seems that busing to that new neighborhood does offer some temporary relief to the situation. Whether this would become a permanent thing and whether it would be valuable, of course, is something that...
Yes, but why, if there's a school very, very close to the, let's say, the kid, and I know this from personal experience in my own family, that if there's a school close in the neighborhood of the child in question, why should then he be bused clear across town?
Well, and I can only speak for our local situation here, the busing situation, as I understand it, is being used to do two things. One, to take the child from the crowded school condition to one where it's less crowded, as a matter of fact, to one where they don't have enough students actually to fill the space they have. Now, this is a very practical thing and a practical approach to it. The other is to break the barrier of isolation where you have, say, all Negroes in a school and all whites in a school, and then the busing is used to transport one group across these lines to the other to establish some sort of communication. Now,
you mean people-to-people communication?
That's right. So both of these have to be evaluated within the context of its own operation.
Well, then my last part question, since I know that there are the callers standing by, I'll make this one a quick one.
Yeah.
For example, let's say a Negro buys a house in a development, as happened here in the local area. It is an all-white development.
Yeah.
And much of the tragedy or the misconception or the misunderstanding of the white people, by the time the one person buys, it seems that the cycle has repeated itself, and by the time that, you know, other people hear about the one Negro moving into the development, other houses are sold to other Negroes, and the neighborhood is back with the neighborhood, which was, as I say, all white, has been transplanted again to all predominantly Negro, and what can be done about that?
Well, were you asking a question about this or just making a comment?
I'd like to know your opinion on it.
Well, my opinion is that this need not happen. I think we've got a classic example of it here in the city of Los Angeles. There's a community here that's called the Baldwin Hills Community. Now, I've been in the area for 18 years, and that means I've been here even before this development took place. And I remember the time when it was completely living white. You actually couldn't buy anything, and then the barriers were let down, and Negroes came in, and whites started moving out, and the area was on the way to becoming, as you said, an all Negro community. But some of the citizens got together and decided this wasn't going to happen. Citizens, both white, Negro, and Oriental, and they have made it their business to help to see that a balance is maintained, going so far as to get a real estate license and actually sometimes buying a house and holding it to sell to whatever ethnic group now helps to maintain the balance. For example, conceivably they might buy a house and not actually sell it to a Negro buyer, but hold it for a white buyer so that the interracial aspect of the community is maintained. I think they're doing a pretty good job on it.
Mr. White, you're really saying, though, that people have to work at it.
Well, definitely so. It's not going to just happen. If you panic, as has been done in so many instances, then it does become this. But if people just use a little bit of common sense and utilize their own resources, it need not happen.
Bob, can I ask you a question?
Sure can.
Why is it that the white man wants to flee from the Negro?
I have often wondered that myself.
Good question.
I've come to a conclusion which is probably the most ridiculous you probably have ever heard.
Try me.
I feel that it dates back to the days, possibly, of the Reconstruction. days after, prior to the Civil War. I think there was a lot of resentment built up between both groups during and after the Civil War. And I think that's where a great deal of this has had its origins.
Do you think the word fear comes into play here, Bob?
Think the word what?
Fear.
No.
You don't feel...
I don't think the word fear, as per the definition, the ordinary dictionary definition, would come into this. I feel that, as I say, this origin of it has come about from back then. I feel that it's not a correct origin, and I feel that possibly a white man probably looks on the Negro as inferior to himself, which is, again, ridiculous. But as your guest said, people have to work at it and attempt to live together. This is a small earth, and it's getting smaller with the population, and if people don't live together eventually, something's got to happen.
Bob, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Well, real quickly, let me jump off here. I was traveling along in the automobile, and I happened to hear you on the radio, and I had to pull over to a phone booth here and call you.
Well, thank you for doing that, and thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Robert Dietz from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener who's listening on WBAL. Our guest tonight,
Mr. L.L. White. Our topic, Will Negroes Riot Again? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight is Mr. L.L. White. Our topic, Will Negroes Riot Again? And if you'd like to express your opinion on Night Call, give us a buzz here at area code 313-846-6601. And you may call from anywhere, collect. You may reverse the charges. Area code 313-846-6601. What do you think about the Negroes in American society? What do you think about this idea of riots? Will they riot? What about your hometown? What do you think? Mr. White, we have a caller in Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM,
Mr. Tom McCaw. Good evening, Tom. You're on Night Call.
Russ?
Yes, sir.
I want to just real quickly say that you have a great show and wish you the best of luck in it.
Well, thank you very, very much, Tom. We appreciate your kindness.
I have a question for Mr. White. Can
yes,
you
sir.
Hear me?
Yes.
I wanted to check a number of people. We've talked tonight so far about communication, and I've had a number of people, particularly sociologists, mentioned many times comparing group Negro personalities with group white personalities. And this situation with the Negro through the years has had to live under what you and I, or all of us, have referred to as white men's laws or white men's rules. And I just wonder if this is the situation. If there were more Negroes in government, would the Negro feel better about it? Or, in other words, here's one group personality living under another group personality. What would it be like if whites were to live under Negro group personality and laws?
Mr. White, would you care to comment?
Could you repeat the question in essence?
Basically, he's asking, what would happen, how would the Negro feel if more Negroes were in government? In other words, that the Negro group possibly even predominated.
Mm-hmm.
How would the white man feel, or how would the Negro feel if more Negroes were represented?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the feeling on the part of the Negro would be that he's more participant rather than a spectator. And I think maybe the role of the participant is always the more serious role than the role of the spectator. The Negro feels, I think, that he's been left out in so many instances that to be involved would really carry with it a connotation that just standing on the sideline looking doesn't carry. On the other side of the picture, I think this is happening. I think increasingly you're having more Negroes in everything, even in the commercials on television. And so far as I know, this is being pretty much accepted by the general public. Somebody made the observation that in some of the stores here in Los Angeles, when they first started employing Negro clerks, nobody made anything about it. It was just another service person, and you were served by the individual. And I think on the West Coast, at least, this is pretty generally true. If a Negro face is involved in something, nobody's shocked by it. On the white side of the fence, let us say, on the Negro side of the fence, I think it's a source of pride and inspiration. It means that this belongs to us. We are part of the game, and we are spectators in the grandstand.
Tom?
One other question, real short. Do you think that the Negro, by living, let's say, under what we would call white men's government, do you think he is eventually, through the years, will assimilate, let's say, a white type of personality? Many times people have said, well, if the Negro and white were races were to intermarry and interbreed, that you would have a wonderful type of personality involved. I know the ulcers and this sort of thing aren't common with Negroes where they are with whites. And by interbreeding, do you think eventually a situation would come out where you would have a high type of individual, fairly intelligent, without a great deal of worrying, cares, mental attitudes that would be, blasé or positive, less positive, let's say.
Of course, Tom, I want to warn you that I'm sure some of our listeners might say that you're making a big assumption here, the idea that the Negroes are happy-go-lucky and that they don't have cases of ulcer. I think possibly some people might disagree with you on that. I'll turn it over to the...
Would you repeat it for me, because I didn't quite hear?
Well, basically, he was asking whether or not what you thought about the possibility of a hybrid of the Negro and white, where both people eventually would, or the new people, would have the better characteristics of both races. What do you think about this?
When he says characteristics, what does he mean? Physical characteristics?
Well, I think he was talking about the cultural characteristics.
I see. Well, I think the trend is, and of course I'm no student of this, I'm simply on their path of a church looking at the situation, but I think the trend now is towards more clearly defined group identification. There's a certain degree of pride in what one is, what it belongs to, and this is not only true of Negroes, it's true of Orientals, it's true of other people. Now, heretofore, the Negro has not had a background for this. Any of the other Oriental groups, for example, who've come to America, who've become citizens, have always had the homeland as the history behind them, as the source of pride. Now, with the uprising of new nations in Africa, the obvious intelligent leadership of some of the African people, the contributions they have made, the contributions they will make, Negro identifies now with Negroes who are not American Negroes. And I think increasingly, you're going to have this sense of pride in oneself, and therefore the opportunity for intermingling at the level which produces a new kind of person is going to be less meaningful to a lot of people.
Tom, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Fine, I thank you, Rob.
Yes.
Mr. Tom McCaw, who had some
rather interesting comments and observations and ideas. Gentlemen listening in Indianapolis, Indiana, and WFBN. Let's go out to Boulder, Colorado. Listener on KTLM, Miss Becky Schroen. Good evening, Becky. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
One of the problems, you know, in race relations of today is the problem of intermarriage. And I'd like Mr. White to tell me what he thinks personally of intermarriage, you know, as a Negro, and also what the teenagers especially that he has come in contact with through his work, how they view intermarriage as Negroes.
Well, first of all, as you know, in this area, it's perfectly legal for people to marry across racial and religious lines if they wish. And yet I've made the observation, as have other people made it, that we have less intermarriage in Los Angeles than you have miscegenation in Atlanta. In other words, where there's a legal barrier to the mixing of the races, you have actually more illegal mixing than you have in a situation like this where it's perfectly permissible to do so. That, however, doesn't rule out the fact that there are those brave souls who are brave enough to move across racial lines for whatever reasons they have, and they do marry. I think it's an individual choice, and it's left to the individual person. I think maybe society or the total group is stepping completely out of line when it says to a single individual, you can't marry this person or you can't marry the other. The other thing, though, is this. What I observe in the Los Angeles area is the fact that once the intermarriage takes place, then there is a tendency to withdraw from both communities. That is, if a Negro marries a white or a white marries a Negro, then they withdraw from the Negro group, they withdraw from the white group, and they tend to form a third group. It's a very small group, but it tends to be an interracial group, people who've had the same kind of experiences, the same kind of problem. What this predicts for the future, of course, is something that none of us at the moment can tell. I think the danger we have made of this situation is the fact that we put interracial marriage at the top of the list in terms of the things Negroes want, when as a matter of fact, it's at the bottom of the list, and most of us feel that some of these other things are far more important, and this is really not a pressing problem.
Could you tell me how many states actually have laws forbidding interracial marriage now?
Mr. White?
Yes.
If you can answer that in about 15 seconds.
Well, I don't have the number. Most of the southern states do.
Ms. Schramm, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you, Russ.
Good night. Bye-bye. Ms. Becky Schramm, gal from Boulder, Colorado, listening on KTLM. Mr. White, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call tonight.
Monday night on Night Call, our guest will be Dr. W.H. McIntosh, and he's the chaplain of the Denver Police Department. Our topic: can I get a fair shake from the police? Until then, this is Gibb, wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.